It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. I'm especially tickled this Saturday. I had a little ambulance ride there about Wednesday in the middle of the night. Scared my poor wife to death. I hope she's listening. She stood with me. I was just so impressed with her. And I thought I was croaking out.
Had a scary deal from what you told me.
Yeah, had a little virus in my little feeble brain, what's left of it. And I knew it hadn't been feeling good, but boy, when my heartbeat got down to about 46 and my blood pressure was 200 and something, so they said you had best go away for a while. So
You fall down? You couldn't get up?
Couldn't get up. I didn't completely fall. I just couldn't get up, you know. And I woke up 4 o'clock in the morning and I sweat through everything that was on the bed, and I tried to get up and couldn't. So a 911 and away in the ambulance. There was 81 bumps between my house and Heartland Hospital.
They had to go out of their way to hit everyone.
Yeah, I congratulated the guy. I said, I know there's 84. You only hit 81 of them. But it was kind of frightening. You know, put some nitro under your tongue and all this stuff. I'm old. I'm 68 and a half years old. And I was ain't supposed to be around much longer. But
well, no, you're supposed to be around a lot longer.
Oh, that's okay. If I go tomorrow, Mark. Gassed her up and guided her.
Yeah.
You know, somebody will write a book about me one of these days. Said, can you believe that did this and he did that?
Well, that was a scary deal from what you said in the ambulance. The guys in the ambulance dumping you on the chest.
Yeah,
saying,
bounding on me.
We're
saying,
losing.
Hey, talk to me. We're losing you. Come on, get up. You know, and so, when they shove that nitro under your tongue, everything's fine.
Huh. What in the world?
It's fine.
That's a scary deal.
Once it dissolves, I think I got 2 nitros in 10 miles.
Honestly thought you were dying.
Oh, sure. Scared me. You know, but that's part of life is dying, isn't it?
Well, an unfortunate part, I guess.
That voice you hear is my co-host, Mark Tobin, the grand poobah of the fishing rod. The best fisherman to walk the face of the earth other than Bill Dance, Jimmy Houston, Harold Insley.
I didn't feel like
Virgil
it last
Ward,
weekend.
You're right. I heard a bad report about you. Shame on you.
Yeah, it was bad.
What happened?
Fortunately, it wasn't just me. Well, the good thing was the people that I was fishing with. This was Camo Adventures. This was Bill Eckert set this program up to take wounded warriors out fishing and hunting. And this was, I think, their 7th or 8th annual fishing trip. And we went to Stockton. And the fish was tough.
Way up?
No, it's normal. In fact, I think it's maybe just a little bit low.
Really?
But this is that transition time, you know, these fish are starting to move out of their summer patterns, and it was hard. I followed what is supposedly the best guide on the lake out there, and it just, nobody was doing any good. I mean, everybody we talked to out on the lake, we had, I think, 7 boats of us out there, and none of us did any good. I mean, we caught a few little fish, but you know, by the end of the trip, I had enough flays. I had maybe 15 bags of flays to send home with them, but the fishing just wasn't very good. And we did a lot of trolling, and some walleye, caught some walleye. Had
really?
A couple of really nice ones up alongside the boat that got off.
Hmm.
So that was fun. But again, the company was fantastic. These guys don't fish. Some of them haven't fished since they were kids.
Wow!
And just like being out in the boat.
Well, sure.
And boy, the smiles was worth $1 million. So and to see, we got there Thursday, and to see these guys mingle with each other, you know, started off, a lot of them didn't know each other.
Sure.
And everybody introduced themselves and told what branch of the military that they served in. And after they started to loosen up, it was really cool to see how new friendships were created. And to see them being able to share their war stories and their, now that they're home stories,
mm-hmm.
and just see that bond that occurred between them.
Cool.
It was where I'm hooked. I will do this
forever
as
and
often.
Ever.
Yep, as often as I can.
Well, I'm proud of you.
But
that's good.
If you're going to Stockton, hopefully it's going to get a little bit better. But trolling crankbaits is the way to get those walleye right now. We were trolling flicker shad and bandits, 200 series bandits, 200 and 300 series. The higher the series and the bandits, the deeper that they go. Right. But the fire tiger color, it's kind of a chartreuse with some a little bit of orange and black in it. That is the preferred color. And on the bandits, a shad color is very, very good.
So you put a lot of 10-pound walleye in a boat?
No. We had one up alongside the boat they guessed was maybe close to 8.
That doesn't count. That doesn't count. I'm sorry. You guys fish too long. That doesn't count.
Had a
up alongside the boat doesn't count.
Now. Well, it didn't count, but it did make the heart pitter. Oh, let me say good morning to Garrett. My son is here in studio. Good morning, Garrett.
Good morning, Dad. Good to be in the studio this morning.
He's going to take some pictures of
pictures?
Your mug, put up on our Facebook page.
What's left of it.
Yeah, what's left of it. Yeah, about fell off.
Garrett is quite the creek aficionado. He loves to go down to the creeks down at Lake of the Ozarks. I got to tell you, this is maybe 8 or 10 years ago. Garrett and I were down there just collecting fish and just looking at them. And there was one that we caught that I'd never seen before. And he said, "Oh, Dad, you got a stud fish." I go, "Oh, yeah, cool." And I'm thinking, where in the world did he come up with stud fish? So I got home. A friend of mine had given Garrett a fishing encyclopedia.
Wow.
It's got illustrations. And I mean, there's thousands of fish in there. Well, sure as heck, it was a stud fish. I still don't know how in the world you knew that.
And I'm just surprised that I was probably 5 years old at that time, and I can still remember that moment. I will never forget that moment. I knew a fish that my dad didn't know, and that will just never be forgotten.
Yeah, I've been called a stud a lot online. I guess I'm just used to it.
Yeah.
Man, those creeks down there are something else. How those creeks are not classified as a wonder of the world, I will never understand. It's just
weird
beautiful
fish
scenery. Beautiful scenery. I mean, if you just go down the creeks and you just stop for not even 10 seconds and just look down, it all comes to life.
Wow.
You just never see anything like it before in your life, and you will never see anything like it anywhere else but the creeks and streams down there.
Yeah, I mean, some of those fish, like, talk about the rainbow darters.
The rainbow darters, they dart all over the ground, and if you somehow able to get one out of the water and just let the sun bring
they
out
change,
the most beautiful colors you ever seen
I've,
in your life.
I've seen
turquoise.
Never thought any colors could be on a fish, let alone down there at the Ozarks. It's just local.
Yeah. Turquoises and oranges.
Yeah,
and
I've
they're
heard
just
that.
Beautiful little fish.
Yeah. Well,
good stuff.
I don't want the little fish, so I'm
it'd be worth it just to see
that's
the colors.
Not why I'm there.
I
speaking of little fish.
Oh, yes.
40 pounds, 6 ounce out of Tanny Como. German brown.
Yeah.
Isn't
another
that
state
amazing?
The state record has been broken twice this year. It was earlier this year. There was I think back in March or whatever it was, there was a 43-something ounce brown caught. And now this one, 46. Only 2 pounds shy of the
world record.
That's insane.
Well, I thought it was the world record when I first heard it, and they were doing a little research on that. That's a huge, huge fish. Now, here's the story I got, and I got 14 stories on this, but this is one I want to leave. The fish didn't hardly fight.
Yeah, you were just telling me that before we came on air.
And I'll find out more, but probably the guy took him an hour, the truth of it. But I don't care how he got him. At 40 pounds and 6 ounces. And the fish died, though, didn't he, like immediately after or not?
They tried to
revive,
but it croaked.
It croaked. Huh. Think you get a fillet off that one?
No. that'd make a meal.
It would, wouldn't it? any crappie being caught anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, Truman is still...
On fire?
Yeah. I talked to Richard Bowling last night. He's my favorite guide out there on Truman. One of my favorites. And he's fishing a tournament, Grenada Lake, maybe. It's some big national crappie tournament. There's like 140, almost 150 boats down
in
there.
In Oklahoma?
I think it's Mississippi. It's one of the southerns. I mean, forgive me for not knowing that. But I talked to him just late last night. He very wearily answered the phone, but he's fishing this tournament down there. And after day one, he is leading the pack.
Whoa, cool.
By almost a pound.
Ooh, that's big.
That's impressive.
That's impressive.
So we'll keep tabs on him, and that'd be cool if he could win that national tournament.
It would, wouldn't it?
But crappie and catching some down at Lake of the Ozarks. But I'm telling you what, the Kansas lakes still have a lot of water. It's insane how much water. Milford still has 17 foot of water. 17 foot high, I mean.
Over Power Pool.
Yeah.
Milford.
Yes. It's just insane that, and Tuttle Creek's still 38 feet high.
And they got a good rain last night, didn't they?
Yeah. Perry's 15 feet high. Clinton's 11 feet high. Still a lot of water on those Kansas lakes. And not much good going out on in Milford. About from what I was talking to Vic Ertley, he is a guide and sells a bunch of really good baits. But he was telling me that about a week and a half ago, everything just changed. All summer, there's been tons of surface activity with white bass and hybrids.
Hybrids.
But a week and a half ago, it died. There is no more surface activity. He said, so fish didn't die. He knows they're still out there, but they've scattered for some reason. So I would say, you know, now that we're starting to get some weather changes, get some windy banks, and they ought to start showing up on those windy banks. But I don't know what's going on with – he said there's tons of shad. They're catching a ton of smallmouth bass, and something that they haven't done in a long time, he caught – I think over 50 largemouth bass.
50?
With a friend just 2 weeks ago. None of them huge, but the spawn has been really good. There's a lot of largemouth bass, and you never hear about largemouth bass on very many of any of the Kansas lakes.
Never.
Right. But, yeah, something good's going on.
Why is it?
It has to be because of the high water and the lack of pressure. And I think we're going to have some really good things come out of this high water this year. And that is that the fish had good spawns and they had good survival because those little fry could get up in flooded stuff and protected on top of the lack of fishing pressure. So all that combined, I think, I think we're going to have good results from this for 2 or 3 years to come.
Well, it better be something out of this. I see where they've had record snows in Missoula, Montana already.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that's.
And,
I mean,
it's
this
good
is
for the elk
hunters
out there, but that's not good for the water levels.
Yeah, and, I was checking water levels this morning. Gavin's Point is releasing 80,000 CFS now after 70,000 CFS all spring and summer.
Yeah.
Now it's back up. It's up to, and I haven't seen them running that much water yet this year. So I wonder what's going on. That's just insane amount of water.
Well, you know, when Buster Slusher sent us that picture of that snowdrift, I think it was in June, if I remember right.
Right. Maybe.
It was like 18 foot deep or something.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
Oh, my
gosh. You're not going to have to step back and look at this program and say, this isn't working, and let's do something different here. This is not normal. This is, you know, they should let that water go January, February. I don't think they can by the law that's the way it's written. And I think they've got guidelines they have to go by, and there's no flexibility. They're going to have to let this water go. If they don't, those poor people across Nebraska and Iowa and Missouri again are going to get it on the chin again. Mm. And we got water up to our cabin door again. You know, 159 highway's closed, 111's closed.
That's unbelievable.
You know, here it is again. You know, had 9.5 inches of rain up in North Omaha. Little Sioux had record levels of flooding just last week.
Wow.
You know, and why in the world don't they do something, you know, to let some of this more go? But I think they got a deadline coming up. I think it's the end of November. They have to shut her down by the law, the way it's written or whatever, the code or whatever you want to call it. But this is not good.
Mm-hmm.
They need to let her go. Let me run it for a while. You know, let me run it for about 90 days. I'll figure this thing out.
Yeah, right.
You know, and we'll get this thing down and we'll do it right. You know, the deal, but they won't do it. They won't do it at all. Hey, we are brought to you by King City Lumber Company, my favorite, right? Second favorite. First, they're one or two. They're the goodest humans I've ever. Goodest humans?
Well.
Goodest humans. Does that make sense?
Kind
of. I'm medicated. Don't pay attention to me. Going down the road of life, bump after bump. King City Lumber. These guys are my buddies, and they do the best outbuildings that you will ever own in your entire life. Whether you need a loafing shed or a hay barn or a place for your little pony or a garage put on your house, go to their website, kingcitylumber.com. You will be on there for 20 or 30 minutes. Also, if you do not like what you see, they will help you design it. And when they come to build it, it will be built the way it's supposed to be built. I had a lady that is a friend of ours through the family that had her garage caught on fire and burnt down, and she said, there's only one person to rebuild it, and that's King City Lumber.
That's right.
First-class lumber, master carpenters, and if they you're not happy, they're not happy. They will stay with you for after. I've been in one the other day. This thing is, and I've said this many times now, I think the thing is 20 years old. Looks like it's brand new.
Awesome.
Just wonderful, wonderful. Marty and Monty Tunks, just a wonderful family. And they're honest and sincere, and they're dedicated in their craft. So KingCityLumber.com. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. Take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We got kind of a coup going on here this morning, don't
Boy,
we?
Boy, do we ever. I'm so excited about the about this show.
We came down, what was it, Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. And the week went by quick. You sure?
Positive.
You're positive?
Yep.
I missed a day in there, didn't I? Tuesday, and we recorded this segment, which we never do.
No. This is a first.
And the reason why, we have Steve Ranella, the meat eater on Outdoor Channel, Sportsman Channels, both. Got the cookbook out.
Number one rated, award-winning television program.
Number one. And it took me 3 months of literally staying on the phone to get him to come to a phone.
I'm telling you, it was so much fun talking to him. I cannot wait.
To air this.
Yes. So, yeah, coming up in the next segment, that is a pre-recorded segment. But he is off the charts. What a good guy. He's just a great guy, and he knows his stuff.
Oh boy.
And you talk about as far as cooking what he harvests, I think he can make anything taste good.
Well, there's part of that in there that's kind of bizarre.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that we can't give away the story.
I can't give away that secret. But I think it'll make everybody sit up and go, "What?" You know. But I've seen this guy, the reason I got hooked on him, they shot a mountain goat up on the side of a mountain, him and his buddy. They sat down and ate him.
Why right there.
Unless we're hungry.
Well, you're fresh at best.
Boy, it was just unbelievable. And he was on the side of a hill, and they kind of dug a little hole and built a little fire and cut
hardcore.
The loins. Oh, yeah. And he carries that backpack with these spices and all this stuff. And these guys, I mean, the germ freaks will go nuts because they use the same knife they got the thing with to eat off of it. But they don't care. And they're still alive. On the deal.
One of the things that I asked him it was great. I asked him if there's anything, you know, in all of his travels and all the different types of food that he's eaten, is there anything that he had eaten that he had a hard time choking down? And his answer to that is awesome.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
So bizarre.
Yeah.
I saw him in Brazil, I think it was, maybe. Yeah, anyway, south. And I think they were eating a monkey.
Ooh.
Why not?
Well, that's, yeah.
Then the other day when I turned it on, they're eating a coyote.
Is that right?
Yeah. Why not?
Well, he said, get past the, you know, the type of animal it is and concentrate more on the cut of meat that you're preparing.
Yeah.
Because meat's meat.
And then they shoot in this javelina. I don't know if you've ever been around javelina, but you smell them long before they get there.
No, I have not.
And they are the nastiest vermin. And when you kill them, they have a musk gland on their leg, and it squirts all over the place, and even makes them worse.
Yeah.
And so they sit down and eat him. You know, I mean, if you can get by the smell, you can probably eat some of this stuff, you know, in the deal. But I think it's going to be kind of, I don't know, informative, I guess, would be the terminology.
And entertaining.
This is National Hunting and Fishing Day, so it's very apropos to do this at this time. This guy here, I think, in my humble opinion, which is totally worthless, come to think about it, but I think he ought to be the ambassador to the outdoor hunting and fishing world.
He's a great face for it. Great, he would be he is. He already is a great ambassador for it.
Yeah. Have you, and we talked about this briefly while we were off the air, when he did the interview with Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm. He's done a couple. I mean, two or three at least.
Oh, yeah. A two-hour segment sometimes.
Yeah, right.
And they just giggle and laugh. And there's a question that I asked him during this interview about Joe Rogan, which, by the way, we are going to have Joe Rogan somehow. I don't know when. Might be 2 years from now if they still have us here or whenever, but we're going to get him to come and do an
interview.
That would
be great. He's an amazing guy.
It is, isn't he?
As you mentioned, he's so curious, but he can talk on just about any type of, it doesn't matter what kind of guests that he has on, and from what side of life that they come from. He can talk on any level, and he asks some of the best questions.
Yep.
He's just a fantastic host, and he's a comedian, too. I'd love to see his show someday.
Yeah, he had Ted Nugent on, and it was an intense interview. Mm. I sat down and listened to 30, 40 minutes of it the other day. Didn't want to. Felt like I ought to. But it's so intense. The stance, you know, this guy, you know, started hunting late in life, and he wanted to understand why we hunt, why do we fish, you know, type thing. A city boy, you know, basically, and finally he realized, click, it really isn't about the kill. It's all great to kill one that's got great big antlers or record this or that, but it's about the ambiance of it, you know,
the experience
of it, your lifestyle of it, you know, like me duck hunting. I could care less if I killed another. I love killing one more duck, but it's the ambiance of it. Being in the blind with my friends and family, it means an awful lot to me.
Being outdoors, away from the same way fishing too. I mean, I don't care if I catch another fish. Whoever I'm with, I want them to catch something.
Sure.
But I just like being outside. I like being on the water. There's just something, you know, relaxing.
Yep.
That you can't get any other way.
Yeah.
Whether you're out in the woods and you watch the day unfold, you watch the world wake up, or if you're on the water, there's just nothing that compares to it.
You know, and I've said this on the air before, like when spring turkey season comes around and you're out there in the whippoorwills and the cardinals come to life and all of a sudden you hear a gobble. Well, you pay $15 for a tag and not a resident tag, I think it is here in Missouri. You got your money's worth.
Yeah, you got that right.
And you just sit there and you realize how insignificant you really are in the scheme of things, you know, and you sit around there and go, wow, because this is the start of everything new again. You know, this is a breeding season for quail, pheasants, turkeys, deer. Yeah, well, deer's over, but this is when they're born. But, you know, it's just amazing. Speaking of deer, I am seeing and talking to, I think deer are coming back a little bit.
Really?
In Northwest Missouri, I'm talking to some people. I've got a good friend up there that hunts every day with bow and arrow. He's really good at what he does. And he's seeing deer. And he said, it went for a long time where he'd see two or three deer a week. Now he's seeing 10 or 12 deer a week on the deal. So that blue tongue and all the stuff that went through this environment maybe has run its course just a little bit. Also, I talked to a guy the other day that I think it would be pretty learned. I'll leave his name out of this. But he thinks this CWD is much to do about nothing.
Good.
And he might be right on this deal. I think that it's a prion. It's something we're going to have to deal with down the road. If I was going to shoot a deer right now, I would want to test it before I gave it to any of my loved ones or gave it to anybody else to eat. Unless I didn't like the person. If my old producer was here, I'd give him, you know. But I got this new producer. He's a good one. The old producer, we could have fed him rat poison, you know. No, I'm just kidding.
Our new producer, Joshua.
He does a great job, isn't he? You think we ought to give him some extra money?
I think he deserves it.
He's shaking his head going, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Joshua Byers, thank you for your excellent work, Joshua.
Blow the dam and trim it. I want to get back to that a little bit. We haven't talked about that. We generally always do every Saturday. Anything going on? Are you hearing anything? Blow the dam and trim it.
Yeah, they're still catching some catfish down there. They've been still running water down there. And they, you know, judging by the lake levels on the Kansas side, they're going to have to do that for a while. So catfish still a good bet down there. They're catching a lot of crappie down there. Haven't heard a whole lot about whites. Some here and there, but nothing consistent. But I would be looking for that to change with the water hopefully going to start cooling down. Can you believe how warm it has been this?
It's been terrible.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Upper 80s and low 90s all September. It's just, where is the fall? We need some fall weather. Maybe we're going to get it. Do you see maybe coming up this week, highs in the 60s?
I see a week from today, it's supposed to be 46 in the morning when we get up.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And I got lucky. You know, we got our corn planted so late this year. That, you know, it's going to develop. It developed in those warm nights. We got a little nubbin corn to hunt ducks on this year. We planted it July 15th. Didn't think it was going to happen. Hey, we are brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, my favorite sponsor up in St. Joseph, Missouri, Trev and Reed, that whole bunch up there. I cannot say enough good things about them. And we talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. But they finally got brand new ones in yesterday. A lot of dealers don't because of the strike and this and that. But they got them day before yesterday. I think I got a bunch of them, Silverados. But 17,000 is one of the rebates in a certain model. 14,500 another rebate. I think I got 102 trucks sitting up there on the ground or something of that nature. What a wonderful bunch of people. And you go in there, and this is a Chevrolet store. It's 20, takes you 30 minutes north of KCI. And you walk in there, and it's packed with people. And they're coming from Butler, Missouri, and Omaha, and Grand Island. And, you know, they've just, because of one, selection, two, the most important part is price. There's no dealer, nowhere, none in the Midwest that's doing the volume that Reed Chevrolet at St. Joe is. And non-commissioned salespeople, you're going to like them. You'll probably end up talking, like you, talk fishing more than you did car deals.
2.5 hours.
But that's just the kind of staff he's got around there, and there's no pressure.
Nope, so they don't put any pressure on you. It's such a refreshing way to buy a vehicle.
You know, never sell you a car, they'll just help you buy one.
Yep.
And that's you think about that, the more you think about that, isn't that refreshing?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Nothing like it.
And, you know, 30 minutes, 28 minutes drive north of KCI, and probably going to save you thousands of dollars. Let's do the math. Isn't that what the guy says? Do the math. But go by and see my good friends at Reed Chevrolet. I don't think I could say enough good things about them in this commercial. They just do wonderful things for people who are down and out. They're just that kind of organization. So please support them. It means an awful lot to us. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. When we come back, we're going to have Steve Rinelli. I think we have him 21 minutes?
Yep.
21-minute interview that we recorded on Tuesday, you're sure?
Yes.
You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We'll be right back with you.
I'm ready for you.
Goodness, am I pumped up and amped up today? I don't think I've been as excited. I've been on broadcast for 35 years, and I've become such a big fan of the Meat Eater is a vast understatement. My wife thinks I should put a cold pack on my head every once in a while because that's all I want to do is sit around and watch the Meat Eater. So I thought, I wonder what the odds would be if I could get a hold of Steve Rinella and have him on a radio show with us. Started working on this, Steve, and Steve is here listening right now, about 3 months ago, and I appreciate you. I know you're busier than most, so thank you for doing this with us.
Oh, I appreciate you reaching out, man.
Your show is unique, different, weird, strange, great, all of the above. Was this like the formula that you finally decided years ago to do, or just kind of matured?
You know, I guess the show's evolved over the years. You know, we've made over 100 episodes now, and in a month, on October 18, we have another season that'll come up on Netflix, and that'll go. You know, that'll also I believe that'll also go to Outdoor Channel, and it's been a long time. But the thing is, when I started doing the show, a lot of people would ask if it was meant to be like a comment about hunting shows in general. And I had never, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of instructional fur trapping videos, but I never paid attention to hunting shows, hunting videos. I liked everything. I'd watched all kinds of stuff about trapping, but I didn't watch hunt shows. So, I wasn't commenting on what they were like. And the funny thing about making the show and kind of how it looks and how it feels and what it involves is I made it with almost everyone who worked on the show with me had no background whatsoever in hunting.
Oh no!
Many of them later went on to do it, but they came. It was just like I was just working with people that came out of film school and stuff, and no one had any idea of like what it was supposed to be like. We just kind of made it how we felt it should be. Right? There's no preconceived ideas.
Wow! Awesome. You've knocked it out of the park, kid.
It's been fun, man. It's been a long time now, you know. It's been a fun ride and kind of building it up over the years.
Steve, I see that you're friends with Joe Rogan, and for our listeners that don't know Joe, Joe is a comedian. He has a fantastic podcast, but he hosted a show called Fear Factor. And one of the segments on Fear Factor, the contestants had to eat something, and it was always something really gross. And I was thinking about you, Steve, last week. I was in my garden, and tomato hornworms had completely devoured a couple of my tomatoes. And I know on one of those episodes, one of the challenges was to eat a tomato hornworm. And I thought, now, from what I've seen, you can make anything taste good. But I'm not sure about a tomato hornworm.
No, but, I haven't even had the temptation to smell a tomato hornworm.
Well, it got me to thinking, though.
I accept the challenge, though.
Well, it got me to thinking. You know, I don't know how much money it would take for me to think about biting into one of those. But through your career, I know you have had to have eaten a lot of strange things. Is there anything that you really had a hard time getting to swallow?
Yeah, I read a lot of American history, and I like to read a lot about, you know, I like to read a lot about indigenous hunters, and I also like to read a lot about, you know, pioneers, like people from Daniel Boone's era in the mid-1700s, and then the mountain men or, you know, Rocky Mountain fur trappers from the early 1800s. And I'll often read about what they ate, and often, you know, and the descriptions of what they ate aren't entirely clear, right? You know, you'd read all the time that they really liked to eat beaver tails, like the tails of beavers. And it took me a long time to really kind of figure out, like, how it is that they must have cooked that stuff. Mm. And one thing I would read about is they used to, the hide hunters, buffalo hide hunters, were just eating just a constant diet of lean red meat. You know, they used to take bile, you know, from a gallbladder, right? They would take bile and dribble it as seasoning on liver.
Oh my!
And also, they used to like to take gunpowder and put gunpowder on it as a seasoning. Oh. And so one time, I took some bile and seasoned a piece of raw liver with it.
Oh my
dude,
God.
It was like putting a 9-volt battery in your tongue. It was one of the more like, you know. Just really, really potent flavors out there.
They're potent, that's putting it very mildly.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was like, it was just genuinely bad. But I was just curious about that stuff because it's funny how people's tastes change over the years. It's like, there's a point, you read about like Daniel Boone there, right? Mm-hmm. People then, in those frontier settlements, they regarded bear meat, like bear meat was what you ate. You hunted deer for hides. 200 bears because that was the good food to eat.
Wow.
And it's just funny now where you get so many guys who, you know, go bear hunting and they're not enthusiastic about the meat or they're looking to get rid of the meat. And you look at the frontier settlement, it was like the preferred food over venison.
Wow.
Just bear meat.
That's surprising.
Wow. Hey, watching one of your shows one night, I don't know whether this is to throw this up or not, but I'm going to. You shot a moose, and this moose turned around, and he wanted to kick your butt. That's just about as simple as I can say it. And I remember I've hunted so darn much of myself, that when you went into the tules after that moose, I was thinking on my sitting on my couch going, no, 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 no.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah. you'll find there's like everyone, well, I don't know, man, people that have a lot of experiences, right? You kind of know what you're supposed to do and not supposed to do, and there's a thing that I learned in writing school where they would always say, you have to learn all the rules and then you're allowed to break them. I wouldn't recommend chasing after something like that. But then, you don't want to get away either. So, I took a stupid shot at a moose, like a, you know, an oncoming frontal shot in the brisket, which, on whitetail deer, man.
Yeah.
Devastating, right?
But, yeah.
But there's just so much muscle and bone on the front of a moose. And then I took off running after him. And he got up and he got up and ran me over. And
wow.
I got a bunch, some of his blood got on me.
Yeah. Yeah, and your gun.
I called my blood.
Yeah.
I called my blood, but I couldn't find the hole.
And I heard the gun go click.
Yeah, so that's funny. Like, you know what's funny about that story? We get so many people emailed about what happened there. I honestly, it wasn't until after we made that show that we were reviewing all this raw footage. We finally figured out what I did was I immediately chambered a new round and then forgot that I chambered a new round and rechambered. So I spit I ejected a full round off into the moss or off into a beaver pond, you know?
Yeah.
Just a stupid mistake, man.
Yeah.
And this kind of thing is like, there's a little bit of a, you know, we'll have some, when we're making the show, we have some debates now and then about, there's you kind of want to make it that you look like, in, there's a tendency or a desire that you make it like you look like infallible and you never mess anything up. But we try to be pretty upfront, try to be pretty upfront about some stupid things that happen.
Well, you know, it just makes the show so much better. It makes you human. I did a lot of waterfowl hunting, and I watch those guys, and they never miss. Well, out of my blind, I've hunted with some of the best shots in the world. We miss from time to time, you know, and it's just so silly, you know, to not edit. And that's some of the best program you can got, because I think people relate to you better when that happens.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
Oh, I think so, man. I like to think they do.
Yeah.
But because there's a thing that goes on, and I try to be aware of the balance of things, right? Like, you have a real luxury to be in the situation I'm in, where we can do these very aspirational hunts, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, every year we can go on multiple hunts that would be a lifetime dream for people to go up and hunt the Arctic Slope for caribou,
sure.
or, you know, the Brooks Range for moose. And you know, it's all these crazy trips. It's like you become aware that when you're doing it, you become aware that, like, you don't want to create a false reality where people look at it and there's nothing they recognize anymore, right? It's all just stuff that they can't do or won't be able to do. And so I think it's important, because people do want to see those crazy places and great experiences. But I think in order to keep it grounded, there has to be sort of a, you know, you want to, like, bring a general reality to it, or show mm-hmm. kind of the thought patterns that people would recognize and ways of looking at things that would be familiar to people, so that you're not just showing them like something that they won't get. And that's also why we, like, very careful about the balance of what we do on the show. I mean, like, one episode we might be, up in BC hunting moose, but then the next episode we might be in, you know, rural Kentucky hunting squirrels with dogs.
Sure.
So I really try to show the total array of, you know, I know BC is obviously in Canada, but I try to show this, like, total array of American hunting from one extreme to the next, whether it's, like, jugging for catfish
uh-huh.
or stalking caribou, right? Yeah. And so that's always been important to me. And I think in the same way that balance is kind of showing, like, things that are funny and the mistakes and,
sure.
and yeah, and it's just, like, constantly trying to address this sense of keeping things equal, if you know what I mean.
Well, you did a great job.
Hey, Steve, I was looking at your website, and I hope this is still current information, but it looked like you were giving away a hunt. Is that still going on?
Yeah, man, we got a cool project going where we recently bought a chunk of land, small chunk of land. We call it the Back 40, but it's actually 64 acres. We bought this small chunk of land in Michigan, and we're eventually going to give this piece of land away, but we're going to do a bunch of habitat improvements on it first.
Cool.
And so one of the things we're doing is for next year, we're giving away a hunt where someone can come out and hunt that property.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I'll be there, and Mark, our guy, Mark Kenyon from Wired to Hunt will be there, and we'll cook wild game at night and hang out. Someone, you know, someone's going to win a chance to hunt that and be with us and hang out with us for a while.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're giving that away. And if people want to go sign up for that, man, you go to our themeateater.com, and you'll find stuff about the hunt giveaway. And then also, I know you guys are in big whitetail country. We just launched a new thing called the Whitetail Weekly newsletter. So people can go to themeateater.com, sign up to win the hunt, check in at the white, subscribe to the Whitetail Weekly newsletter and follow Whitetail News. It's kind of like, you know, everything whitetail with a little meat eater bent on it.
Wow, how cool.
And then eventually they'll be able to watch our Back 40 show, which is a show about this property project we have going on.
Hmm. Awesome. Wow, way to give back.
Yeah.
That is
Isn't
the coolest
cool?
thing ever.
Yeah. Are you approachable? I'd like to win that.
Can you be bribed?
Oh, man, I was just sitting here thinking I'm going to come hunt with you guys either way, man. I've never hunted in camp.
Oh, you're kidding. Well, you got to do that.
You got to know you're in Kansas City. You're in Missouri. I have one in Missouri, I remember you said Kansas City, and probably like a lot of Americans, I make the dumb mistake of thinking that's in Kansas now and then. Yeah.
Well,
but yeah,
real close.
We do hunt Missouri a bit, but I would love to go down there again.
Yeah. Well, you know, at 5 minutes drive from here, we're in Missouri, and we're here in Kansas now recording a show, so that's how close we are.
Okay, good. So I wasn't too far off.
So, you know, well, I'd love to have you, come and, because I want to make duck edible. I kid myself every year. I make them edible, and I think you could do it.
I don't think ducks as hard as deer.
I'm not joking. Like eating mallards. I'd like all duck, man. I'll take that challenge.
Okay.
I'll take that challenge.
Well, you have a standing invite.
Unless you got messed up taste buds, and I can't.
You know, he did go through the 60s, so.
Yeah, I did.
There has been some damage done.
Yeah. Hey, I can't help.
I would love to come do some duck. Oh, how late in the year do you guys hunt duck?
We hunt 60 days up here. Teal season just got over. And last year we killed it was great. I mean, we had the best duck season we ever had in our life. A lot of clubs didn't, but we did. And we've got the only flooded corn this year because we've had such a flood in this area. So it ought to be good, and I'd love for you to come.
Should go, the third week of January?
How late do you guys keep at it there? Like out here in Montana, we hunt a lot of ducks in December and January, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, our season starts November the 2nd and runs for 60 days. So December 31st, it's over with.
Same deal. You got there able to keep at it.
Yeah.
We should talk about it. I would love to come out and meet you. It'd be fun.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. And then you can shoot a whitetail deer if you get here at the right time. And I got a good spot where you kill a whitetail if you wanted to. So
let's do it. Not this winter for ducks. We'll do it next year. I'd love to make it happen. Let's stay in touch.
Steve, I take it that you should not season duck with bile or gunpowder.
No, I generally don't.
That's not in your cookbook.
Let my kids really beg to have bile out there.
But. Hey, I got a buddy that's a big Joe Rogan fan, and I was talking to him. I said, hey, I'm going to do a little interview with Steve today, and he said, ask him if he's got any dirt on Joe Rogan. Okay,
you know what? I'm going to tell you something, and I get asked that all the time. There really isn't. The guy, I'm telling you, the guy is, he's one of the, I don't want to say one of the few. He's what he seems like he is. He's a curious, fun-loving, self-deprecating, extremely generous, thoughtful person who really respects and appreciates his friendships. He is a good dude.
How'd you get hooked up with him?
He was just interested in hunting and reached out because he wanted to find out about hunting. So took him out on his first hunting trip.
The podcasts that you do with him are great. And 2 hours at a time? How in the world do you do that? Although you don't have much of a problem talking, I don't believe.
Thank you.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
But you've got a cookbook out, too.
He's great fun, man. He's such a good advocate for hunting, too.
I'll bet.
Before we go, got to promote your cookbook. I don't have it yet, but I'm going to get it immediately. I know one person that has it and just raves about some of the recipes that you have in there. Well, like I said earlier, I think you can make about anything taste good. How can people get a hold of your cookbook?
Yeah, just go on Amazon, man. I mean, that's the best way to go get it. You know, there's a couple things you can do. You can go on Amazon.com and find it. The Meat Eater Fish and Game Cookbook is called Recipes and Techniques for Every Hunter and Angler. Or we also sell signed copies on our on our own merchandise store on our website. We sell signed copies, and we're in the process of signing a whole bunch of them right now. And they'll go up for sale on there over the holidays. But if you want to get it right now, go to Amazon. It'll be on your door in no time.
Oh, cool.
Or go to themeateater.com and go into our store. And you'll be able to, if you watch there, you'll be able to get yourself a signed copy of the book. But the book was a big hit, man. We put a lot of work into that book, and really surprising to see. It was really surprising to see the reception for a wild game cookbook. You know, you always hear all this stuff. You always hear all this negativity about, hunters are going away and whatever. And we're all such evil, bad people. But then you look at, like just the widespread affection and reception across. I mean, even outside of the hunting and fishing community for that book, and you realize that there's a lot of positive out there, and people remain very excited about eating off the land, and and learning those skill sets and self sufficiencies and how to feed your family on game meat. So it was fun to see the reception. The book is still going strong.
Would you say the number one mistake people make on cooking wild game is overcooking it?
You know, we were laughing about this the other day. You're either cooking it too long or you're not cooking it long enough.
Boy, a lot of point to that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it seems like you got to cook them, like, not long at all or a long time, depending on what it is, man.
Yeah.
And the book gets into that. Like, the book takes the approach of, rather than thinking about it like, oh, it's a whitetail recipe or it's an elk recipe, you know, it doesn't look at game that way. It's very, like, cut-based, right? So it'd be like, okay, whatever, I don't care. It's a mule deer, it's a whitetail deer, it's an elk, it's a moose. Forget about that. Let's talk about the cuts. So let's talk about the shank.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the rounds on the back leg. Let's talk about what to do with the tenderloins. Let's talk about what to do with the neck. And get rid of this idea that there's like a whitetail recipe. It's not. It's like, it's very cut-focused, and it tries to teach people how to look at the cuts on things. And there's a lot of good information on waterfowl. There's a lot of good stuff on ducks. And I feel like if you mess around in there, you'll have some good luck.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, that's the way to do it right there.
We got 2 minutes left or a little bit less. What's your schedule like? Where are you going from here? This was in September when we're recording this. Where are you going?
Yeah, just got I hunted here at home in Montana with my brother. And, man, me and my brother used to just hunt together nonstop, you know, and then life got crazy and jobs and family and everything. So it was real fun. Like, we went out for a couple of days and called in the bull.
Cool.
We called in a bull on opening day, and he got a bull of his bow by about 10:30 a.m.
Wow.
We were real happy and hugging on the side of the mountain about that, and that was fun. And then was down in Colorado there, and tomorrow I'm headed to Wyoming, just driving down south of the border here to Wyoming to hunt antelope. Then I'll be back home for a weekend to spend a couple of days with my kids.
Cool.
And then go back to Wyoming for a long mule deer hunt up in the mountains, hunting off horseback, which would be a good time. I'm not an experienced rider, but I still think it'll be fun to check that out a little bit. I might just get off that thing and walk alongside of it maybe, but we'll see how it goes.
Why'd they bite you, you know?
Yeah. My sister-in-law runs a big guest ranch. She's got 100 and some horses, and it's funny hanging out with her. When she looks at a horse, she's not looking at what I look at. So, I just see a four-legged animal, and she sees, like, attitude. You
know? Oh, what a treat. What a treat to talk to you.
Steve, we're out of time. Oh, would you please, I especially put that invite out to you. I don't do that much, and I'd love to have you around.
No, I'm going to make that happen. I'm not joking. I'm going to go talk to her. I'd love to. My guy I work with right now, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, anytime you want to come, you're more than welcome, and you're welcome to stay at my house. You're welcome to stay at the Duck Club. You're welcome anywhere that I go, and you're a good human, and I appreciate you more than you'll ever know.
Ditto.
All right, man, we will meet. I promise that we will meet.
All right, Steve.
You're the best, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Guys. Thank you for taking your schedule and doing this. I know it was tough on you. Okay, kid.
Be safe out there.
All right.
Wow.
Wow, what an interview.
That was so much fun. Back. What a great guy.
We're out of time, huh? We got 3 minutes.
Well, everybody, go get his cookbook. Go to either Amazon or, like he said, you can go to his website, themeateater.com, and get a signed copy. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And that hunt, giving away that hunt and giving away that land, is that not the most amazing thing you've ever heard?
Yeah.
What a great thing to do. What a great guy. I just can't tell you how impressed I am with him.
And I knew this about him through other hunting sources. That's why I stayed after him for 3 months to get him on the air. And I think a lot of people would have given up and thrown their hands in disgust, but I finally got to a publicist. And publicists like selling books. So they lined this all up. What took basically 2 weeks just to get schedules and times and
studio. He's such a busy guy.
And we just kept hanging in there and hanging in, and we changed the times like 3 or 4 or 5 different times. And finally, so Olivia, who did a great job.
She is a treat.
She was a sweetheart. She stayed
top-notch
with us, and we finally caught a day when he was literally going to be home washing a car type attitude, and we got him to come to the phone. So great ambassador to the sport, great ambassador to hunting, the whole works on the deal. So
what a treat that was.
Oh, well, and loved giving back. Yep. Loved getting back.
Go to themeateater.com. Enter that. The hunt that he's good. Can you imagine going on a hunting trip with those guys? What?
Oh. Some of the stories would be true. Oh, my goodness. It would be a ball. Tell you what, that wraps it up. Go to Reed Chevrolet today and buy a new Silverado pickup. I'd appreciate that, and he would, too.
Or go down to Sportsman's Outfit Marine and get a kayak. Joe told me that there's some guys from St. Joe coming down today to pick up some. Three guys from St. Joe coming down to get kayaks.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that's good for them. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. I hate to see the show go.
I know.
I really like that guy.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah,
we'll get him back.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. I hope so.
Yeah, I do too.
Go to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.